I'd like to say a few things about Esav. Esav is not our most popular personality, but it is true that Esav started his career very closely attached to Yaakov. And that was the difference. That was the difference between Abraham, who had two sons, but two different wives, and two different attitudes that the two different wives had. So Yitzchak became the son of Abraham, the only son of Abraham, and Yishmael Hi. And Ishmael was rejected. Even though it depends how you look at it. Depends how you look at who you think Ishmael was or who Ishmael is in this day and age. He was basically ignored. But this is not the case with Esav. Esav was not ignored. Esav became like an ongoing, never-ending problem that the Jews, all the history of the inability of Am Yisrael to get along with its neighbors, to get along with, is variously applied to Esav, which is also Edom, which in Chazal is also Romi. Romi is Rome. Rome is responsible for the Galut, the destruction of the temple in the year 70, the exile of Bnei Yisrael at that time, Romi, and the continuing exile till today. Today we're still in the, that's how we think of it, of the Roman exile. I mean, how you factor in Eret Medinat Yisrael, how you factor into history, this kind of way of talking about history, Begadol, how you factor it in is your business. But you know that it's factored in different ways. Some people say this is Tchilata Geula, right, whatever that means. You know, it's Geula, whatever Geula is, a redemption. You know, like when you translate a word that you don't understand by another word that you don't understand, you haven't really increased information and knowledge. So we are in a position. So some people would say that this is Geula, what we have today in Eretz Yisrael, Gantz and Netanyahu. That's Geula. That's Geula. And some people will say it's a Fata Morgana. And it's really a kind of punishment to get us to ignore the realities around us and how bad they are. I think opinion A has a little more currency today than opinion B. But the fact of the matter is that we don't know. People who have, if you have a historical perspective, you kind of don't know where you are, because history teaches you not too many things, but one thing that history teaches you is that things change. It was bad, it could be better. It was better, it could be worse. I mean, so we don't, it's very hard for us. The Gemara says, Ein Eid Nase Dayan. This is Gemara in Sanhedrin. And a witness does not become a judge. I mean, practically, that's the case. You know, like if you have witnesses who saw something happen or think they saw something happen, you can't appoint them as judges. It's like forbidden. It is not, you know, not an acceptable position. So you could say that about ourselves in a kind of more metaphoric sense. Ein Eid Nasadayan. We're here in the middle of all this, Eretz Yisrael and Medinat Yisrael and what's going on. And we can't allow ourselves to make a judgment. On the other hand, we have to act somehow within some kind of comprehensible judgment, nevertheless. So we don't know what Romy Edom Esav is doing today. We don't know. I mean, you know, nothing is what it used to be. Rome is not the Romans. Those Romans, they're different Romans, Italians, they call them. You know, and they seem to be having a good time and not thinking too much about the Jewish people at the moment. So that's the Romans. The Edomites were around earlier in history. Like, we don't have much of a connection to them, but we know that they existed because they are in the Chumash and in the Tanakh. And Esav is himself a perplexing personality. Well, if you look at the sheet, I'm going to look at my Chumash, if you don't mind. The sheet is a Lamed Gimel, right? Lamed Gimel, Perek Lamed Gimel took place after Yaakov. Remember what happened? Yaakov is coming back. He's coming home. Right? We don't know that he's prepared himself seriously for an encounter with Esav. But we do remember that Esav stated clearly that he wanted to kill Yaakov when he ran away. Right? And his parents, Yaakov, the parents of Yaakov and Esav, were unable to deal with that. So they told Yaakov to run away to Lavan. And he did that. And he spent many years there getting wives and children and power and rechush of one kind or another. That's what he did, Yaakov. And finally, instructed by God, he decided to leave. And he told Lavan that this is it, you know, he's leaving. And then they had the story with the trafim, which is a word that means idols, certain kinds of idols. I don't know what kind of idols. They were missing, and Lavan chased after him. And then they made an interesting pact. Right? I'm talking about the end of last week's parasha. Right? They made an interesting pact, and the interesting pact was that Ad Kad, they made an imaginary line. And they said, you, Lavan, you're up to here. And me, Yaakov, I'm from here to Eretz Canaan. Okay, whatever that means, it indicates that Yaakov was somehow had parity with Lavan. Even though when he came to Aram Naharaim, he had nothing. At least nothing that we know about. When he came to Aram Naharaim, he had nothing. When he left, he had everything. And however, Lavan accused him of creating a reason for dissent. And that was the trafim that Rachel stole. Now, you could think, well, you can say whatever you want about Rachel and, you know, the fact that Yaakov liked her more than Leah. Does that mean that she had a good reason for stealing the trafim? Or she stole the trafim because she was used to it. She was used to having trafim. I don't want to get into that. So here, suddenly Yaakov and his entourage, which was sizable, finds himself on the border of Canaan, and they want to go in. So naturally, he has to ask permission of Esav. He has to ask permission of Esav. He does that. He, you know, asks permission. He asks permission of Esav, and then he has this wrestling match with the angel of Esav. I mean, okay, it's a kind of a Shakespearean metaphor, you know, like in the middle of the story, you find something happens that's very strange, but it indicates how it's going to turn out. right? And how it's going to turn out is that Yaakov is going to win. So after that, Yaakov comes to Esav and says to him, okay, I'm here, and here are my wives, my children, my sheep, my chattel, I mean, all this stuff. And Esav departs from his supposed attitude, which was that he wanted to kill Yaakov. And then suddenly everything changes, and that's chapter 33 that we're looking at. So, chapter 33, one second. Let's look at the words. Vayisa Yaakov einav, he picked up his eyes. Vayar v'inei Esav ba. He saw Esav ba, Esav is coming at him. Imagine this. V'imo abamot ish. Abamot ish, let's assume that that's a lot. I mean, I don't really know, but Abamot sounds like more ish than Yaakov could possibly have had. So he had Abamot ish, Vayachas et hayeladim al Leah v'Rachel b'shtei hashvachot. It sounds like the families were together, right? Wife one with her children, wife two with her children, Shifra one, Shifra two, with their children. But that doesn't sound like he was preparing for a fight, for a battle. The fight, the actual fighting, was usually given over to the men. That's true even today, when there are many exceptions, right? Pasuk bet. Vayaser et hashvachot v'et yaldehem rishona v'et Leah v'yilade achronim v'et Rachel v'et Yosef acharonim. So here it's a little bit strange. He put the shvachot first and their children, and then after them Leah, and then et Rachel v'et Yosef achronim. It's like you say the ones he loved the most he put in the rear, so that they would have the best chance of escaping. Rashi says, you look at Rashi on the sheet, Rashi quotes this pitgam, this phrase that Chazal used, acharon, acharon chaviv, which you could either see as being a mystical idea, the last one is the one you like the most, right? Or it's a kind of psychology. It's like it tells you something about human psychology. That acharon, acharon chaviv, you know when you eat, the different foods on the plate, the same plate. So sometimes people eat the thing they like the most first, and sometimes they eat it last. You could divide the world into these two groups somehow. But one group says acharon, acharon chaviv. You know, that you even if you fill up on the other stuff on the plate, right? Okay, we're up to Pasuk Gimel. V'hu avar lifnehem v'yishtachu arza sheva pa'amim ad gishto ad achiv. V'hu avar lifnehem. Yaakov goes across them. He walks in front of them. V'yishtachu arza sheva pa'amim ad gishto ad achiv, and he bowed down seven times until he reached his brother. Vayavor lifnehem, amar, im yavo otar hashal yilechem, yilechem bitchila. So this is Yaakov. Yaakov says that this wicked man comes to fight. Okay, I'm here and I'll fight with him. This wicked man. Right, that's what Rashi says. Yivo oto rasha. Oto rasha. We don't know exactly why he's such a rasha. I mean, what did Esav do that was so terrible? When he came, remember when he was just a lad? He came very hungry. And he said to Yaakov, could I have some of this cholt that you made? And Yaakov said, okay, I'll give you a little cholt, but sell me your birthright. I've got a clue what Yaakov meant and what Esav thought that Yaakov meant. But Esav was definitely the one in a difficult situation. He was the one who was not doing anything wrong. He was hungry. He came back from, what was Yaakov doing? He's supposed to be learning. What is he making, chont? It seems unreasonable. And then later on, his father, Esau's father, Yitzchak, said to him, look, you know, make me a good meal, and I'll be in a good mood, and I'll bless you. Rivka said, no, can't be, this is terrible, this is beyond the pale, and I've got to make sure this never happens. Like Esau, he didn't do a thing, it's only when, after the Yitzchak says to Esau, look, I don't really have another bracha for you. It's some kind of a lack of connectivity between Yitzchak and Esau. Esau says, okay, I'm going to kill him. I don't even know what that means. I mean, what it means, that was that accepted in the society in which they lived? And if you didn't like somebody, or if you did, it's like Cain and Hevel. Cain and Hevel. What was the idea of killing Hevel? I mean, what God accepted the sacrifice that was brought by Cain, and rejected the sacrifice that was brought by Hevel. So, what?
He rejected
the other way around.
So God accepted the sacrifice of Hevel and rejected the sacrifice of Cain. So what did Cain do? He said, he had two choices. He says, I can improve. Whatever it is I'm doing, I can make it better. I can improve it. Or I can kill Hevel. If I kill Hevel, then I'm de facto the winner, because there's no competition. So that's how murder came into the world. Like, it was a shortcut to achievement. Instead of Cain achieving something, he just got rid of the opposition, right? Which may be the same way that Esau thought about it. It was like, you have to, it's like I hear in the radio, you know, a news every day that somebody killed his wife. You know, so it seems to me that there's a world out there where that's a way of solving a problem. You know, like it comes from someplace.
A duel.
The what?
Pistols at Dawn, very recent.
It's what?
A duel, Pistols at Dawn.
It's a duel
with pistols, people.
Oh, a duel with pistols, yeah, but in all the movies that I used to see, it was like always a technical problem, you know, like
but
pistols didn't work right.
But it's not a good thing when people do that. It's not a positive thing, it's an evil thing. So.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about whether there's a world out there where people think that killing your wife is a normal thing to do. That's what I mean. I know they do it. As I was saying, so Esau, Cain and Hevel. Well, Cain killed Hevel in order to reduce the competition. He figured if there's only one person bringing a sacrifice, so that one person will certainly be approved of by God. But that's an interesting idea of how murder came into the world, right? Murder came into the world because it was seen as a shortcut. So Esau said, I'm going to kill Yaakov because he took everything. Took everything from me. He didn't leave me a thing. I mean, you could be a little more sympathetic to Esau, even though we're generally not sympathetic to him. And now here is Esau. Here is Esau coming back. I mean, Yaakov coming back to Eretz Canaan, Esau meeting him at the pass, you know, whatever the pass was, and Pasuk Dalet, Vayaretz Esau Likrato Vayechabkeyu, right? That's what it says, that Vayaretz Esau Likrato. Well, that's like either an act of war or an act of peace. In this case, here's Yaakov standing there. He doesn't know. Is Esau running at him? I mean, Esau was a tough guy. He was out in the field. He was a hunter. You know, So you got this guy who you haven't seen in years and years running at you, and the last thing you heard from him was that he was going to kill you.
But he didn't really, he didn't actually say that. He thought it, Esav.
Yeah, okay, but that's why, but why did they send him away? They must have known that.
Well, because Rivka got the Ruach HaKodesh, but who got the Rivka? But
yeah. I mean, that's good enough.
Right. But I mean, he didn't like proclaim it to the society that it.
Yeah, but here it's just the two of them.
Right.
And Yaakov ran away because of the fact that Rivka knew what he was thinking.
Right.
And, all right. Vayipol al tzabarav. This is like a, became an important pasuk. Vayipol al tzabarav. Tzabarav. Right, you see that there's a kri uchtiv in the pasuk, and the ktiv, the way it's written in the Sefer Torah, is like a singular, tzavaro. It's a mistake that in the editions of the Chumash, they vocalize the what you're not supposed to read, as though it's a word you are supposed to read. See, if you look at the in my Chumash that I'm looking at, there's a vocalization, a patach under the tzadi and a kamatz under the vav and another kamatz under the resh. That's the vocalization of the kri. But it's not the vocalization of the ktiv. The vocalization of the ktiv is tzavaro, singular. Kri, tzavarav, plural. It's a singular, plural kind of the distinction. And then, Vayichat bekehu, Rashi. Rashi says, Nitgal gilu rachamav kishira'ahu mishtachaveh kol ishtachavayot halalu. Nitgal gilu rachamav. I don't know if that's a compliment or not a compliment, Rashi. You know, Nitgal gilu, somehow he became merciful. Esav became merciful because he saw Yaakov bowing all these bows, right? And then the pasuk says, Vayisha kehu. And Vayivku. Vayisha kehu means he kissed him. He kissed him. Now Rashi points out, in this sheet, it doesn't have it, but in the Chumash, that you read in the Beit HaKnesset, there are dots on all of the letters of Vayisha Kehu. It's in the Chumash. The vocalization is not in the Chumash, but the dots are. The dots are in the Chumash, so they're considered to be Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. That's the way Moshe Rabbeinu taught us the Torah, right, with those dots. So Rashi says, Vayishakehu nakudalav. There are dots on that word. V'yesh cholkim badava bebraita de sifri. Yesh shedarshu nekudazo. There are those who use these nekudot as a source of a drasha. Lomar shelo nishakel belo bekol libo. He didn't really mean it. Esav. He ran. He had grabbed him, he hugged him, and he kissed him. But it wasn't for real. Omar Rav Shimon ben Yochai, halacha hi biyadua she'esav sonei li Yaakov. Halacha hi biyadua she'esav sonei li Yaakov, ela she'nichmeru rachamav vota sha'av v'nishako b'kol libo. The truth is that Esav hates Yaakov. I mean, it doesn't mean he hates him now or this minute. It means he just hates him forever. There's nothing going to change about that. That's what Chazal said, that halochahi, right? It's a rule of nature. Biyadua she'esav shoned l'Yaakov, ela she'nichmeru rachamav. Now, nichmeru, we don't know what Chazal means. Nichmeru rachamav. So, in other words, at that moment, he became merciful. Botasha al nishako b'kol libo. Like, why did Chazal say that? What terrible thing did Esav do? The first real conflict between Yaakov and Esav, Esav is a very friendly person. And even though he thought to kill him once, but you know that when you think of something, it's not the same as doing it. So that's Vayishakehu. Vayishakehu, according to Rashi, says there's a drasha to be made. There's something to be understood. Right? And so what it means is it looks like Esav and Yaakov are making peace, but in fact they're not. That's what Rashi says. Vayisateinav, Vayarta Yadnashim, Vayeta Yeladim, Vayomer, Mi Eila. Who are these children, these women? Vayomer HaYeladim Asher Chanan Elokim Et Avdecha. He understands that language, right? Because Esav was brought up in the house of Yitzchak and Rivka, so he knows what Yaakov means when he says HaYeladim Asher Chanan Elokim Et Avdecha, that God gave to me, right? Pasuk Vav, Vatigashna Shvachot Heina V'Yaldihem V'Tishtachavena. Oh, okay, so we have reconstituted the meeting. The meeting is now friendly. Everybody is bowing down to everybody. Pasuk Zayin, V'tigash gam Le'ah V'Yeladeh V'Yishtachavu, V'achar Nigash Yosef Rachel V'Yishtachavu. All of them came to Esav and declared themselves, well, they bowed down to him, which kind of means that whatever authority he had, they accept it. They accept it. Vayomer, mi lecha kol ha-machane hazeh. And he said, Esav said to Yaakov, where'd you get all of this stuff? Asher pagashti, vayomer levzochein b'enei Adonai. In order that we should please you. It's all done in order to please. So he says, mi lecha kol ha-machane. Mi lecha kol ha-machane. So Rashi says, Rashi, Pasuk Chet, Mi lecha kol ha-machane, Mi kol ha-machane, Asher pagashti, Shehu shelcha, Klomar, that is to say, Lama hu lecha, how did it get to you, to be yours? Pshuto shel mikra, Al ne'emar al molichei ha-mincha, Al molichei ha-mincha, That's the pshat. Mi lecha kol ha-machane hazeh. So Rashi says, you see the Rashi pshuto shel mikra? Ne'mar al molichei ha-mincha. U'midrasho kitot shel malachim. Kitot shel malachim paga. Shayu dochafim oto ve'et anashav. Vomrim lehem shel mi atem, vehem romrim lehem shel Esav, vehem omrim haku haku, ve'elu omrim hanichu, beno shel Yitzchaku, ve'lo hayu mashkichim alav, ben beno shel Avraham hu, ve'lo hayu mashkichim amru shel Yaakov hu, omrim lehem imkein, Mishelanu atem. Okay, well, I'll go through it again, but you can see that Rashi has a little difficulty when Esav came and said, "Milicho kol ha-machanez." I mean, like, what's the question? I mean, obviously, it all belongs to Yaakov of whatever you have. So he wanted a blow by blow of how he got to the riches that he had. So if you look again. Lama klomar she mi kol ha-machane asher pagashti shushalcha. Where does this machane come from? The machane, the camp that I met up with, klomar, lama hu lecha. How did you get to it? Esav says. It sounds like from the Rashi that Esav was convincing himself that fighting with Yaakov was not a good idea, right? Yaakov could come back with all of this people that even though he had 400 soldiers, it didn't really matter. So now if you look at the Rashi says, Pshuto shel mikra, Ne'emar al molichei ha-mincha. He says what he's referring to, pshuto shel mikra, is he's referring to the people who brought him the presents. Yaakov sent shlichim to bring presents to Esav. That's pshuto shel mikra. U'medrasho, which means a less obvious interpretation, but one that he thinks is correct because Chazal said it. Right, that's Rashi's position. Pshut medrasho, kitot shel malachim paga. There are groups of angels that he ran into. He Esav sheyu dochafim oto ved anashav. They would push him around and his people. Vomrim lahem shel miatem, and he Esav would say to them, "Where'd you guys come from? You angels, where did you angels come from?" V'heim omrim lahem, heim omrim lahem shel Esav. V'heim omrim haku haku. And they say, "We are the people of Esav." And they say, "Hit them, hit them." V'elo omrim hanichu. And the other ones say, "No, let them be." Bino shel Yitzchak, hanichu et Yaakov, right? Bino shel Yitzchak, who is the son of Yitzchak, v'lo hayu mashgichim alav. Ben bino, he says, that didn't impress them so much. Ben bino shel Abraham, who, he's also the grandson of Abraham, v'lo hayu mashgichim, lo hayu mashgichim, they didn't pay any attention, they kept hitting him. Achiv shel Yaakov, who, He's Yaakov's brother. Omrim lahem imkei mishelanu atem. In other words, according to Rashi, milich hakol ha-machaneh hazeh is somehow a way of pacifying the animosity between Yaakov and Esav. So we have another case of pacifying the animosity of Yaakov and Esav. And we go on to the next pasuk. Pasuk tet vayom Esav yesh li rav achi yel lecha asher lecha. He doesn't want to take any presents, right? We know about the Marat HaMachpelah in Parashat Chayei Sarah, that was like the way of talking. The way of talking. I want to take the stuff you brought me, but I want to first claim that I'm rejecting it. But at the end, you take it. At the end, you take that. So he says, Yehi lecha, v'yom Esav yesh li rav. Esav says to Yaakov, I have a lot. Achi, my brother, yehi lecha asher lecha. So there it is. There it is. No? You don't see it? I'll say the pasuk again. V'yom Esav yesh li rav. Achi, yehi lecha asher lecha. You know, this is Esav's revelation. Esav's revelation was Achi. That in spite of whatever happened in the past, this is who we are. We are brothers. That makes a difference. Right? That we're not going to repeat the mistake of Cain and Hevel. And we know what happened to Cain as a result of that mistake. So this is what he says. Vayoma Esav yesh li rav. Esav says, I didn't lose anything by not getting the bracha, their first bracha, which was a bracha of, as they say, gashmiyut, like things, stuff, that bracha was stolen from Yaakov, from Esav, and given to Yaakov, right? The bracha of stuff. The bracha of stuff. And Achi, he says, Yehi lecha asher lecha. I'm not jealous of the fact that you stole the bracha and that I see in front of me the result of that bracha. I mean, you went to a very difficult situation, to Aram Naharaim, you were with Lavan. You were oppressed, actually, in the labor that you did, and somehow the bracha worked. But as far as I'm concerned, Yeshli Rav. Yeshli Rav meant that the bracha was not unique. It wasn't only that Yaakov would get whatever he would get, but I, Esav, was also able to amass a fortune. And able to amass a fortune, right? I'll take mine and you take yours. Rashi says, "Kan hodalo al habrachot." Kan hodalo al habrachot. He admitted that Yaakov received the bracha that he would have liked to have. And therefore, he imagined. I mean, just pasuk changes the whole story. That Yaakov went. He said, "In order for me to make peace with Esav, Esav has got to make peace with the idea that I received the blessing from our father. If he can make peace with that idea, then we can make peace." And that's what Esav says. He says, "Well, Yom Esav Yesh Li Rav Achi, my brother, Yilecha Sher Lecha. I don't feel that it's that the bracha that you receive is a negation of the bracha that I didn't receive, right? That I didn't receive. So that's the bracha. Vayomer Yaakov, next pasuk." Alna imna matzatichem beinecha velakachta minchati biyadi ki alkenra iti panecha girot b'nei Elohim vatirtzeini. Alna, Yaakov says, imna matzatichem beinecha, if I'm able to comprehend you and you're able to deal with me, velakachta minchati biyadi, you'll take my present, the gift that I bring. Ki al kenra iti panecha kirot pine elokim vatirtzeni. Vatirtzeni is, I'm happy about it. But what does that mean? Matzadi chen. Imna matzadi chen beinecha lakachta min chati miyadi. What could that possibly mean? Lakachta min chati miyadi ki al kenra iti panecha begomer. Rashi. Ki kedai v'hagun lecha shetekabel minchati. It's reasonable that you should accept my gift al asher ra'iti panecha, because I saw your face v'hem chashuvim li kriyat pnei amalach shera'iti sar shelcha. And they are somehow, he says, Ki al kenra iti panecha, the pasuk, I'm reading the pasuk according to Rashi, Al kenra iti panecha, I see in your face, kiraot pnei Elohim atirtzeni. Who's the pnei Elohim that he saw? The angel that he wrestled with, according to Rashi. You know, Rashi doesn't like too much anthropomorphism, and that's what he has here, sar shelcha. Va'od al shenitratzeita li limchol al surchani. Va'od. Furthermore, you have come make peace. You've forgiven me, actually, al surchani, on the stink that I produced, on the terrible things that I did. V'lo lama hizkir lo riyat amalach. And why did Yaakov mention the angel that he fought with, right? The angel which was the officer of Esav. Kidei she yityarei heimenu v'yomar ra'a malachim v'nitzol, in order that Esav should be afraid of him. And he would say he saw angels and he was saved. Eini yachol lo me'ata. I won't be able to fight with him. The last word in the pasuk, kirot pnei Elohim vatirtzeni, Rashi says vatirtzeni, nitpayasta li. You have forgiven me V'chein kol ratzon sheba mikra l'shon pius. This is a Rashi comment on the word. Vatiritzeini. Ratzon is willfulness equals pius. Like a kind of... pius means they make peace with each other. Pius. And then he even gives you an old French word that fits into that idea. Ki lo liratzon yelechem. Lo liratzon yelechem. You're not going to find peace with each other. HaKorbanot ba'ot lefayes v'liratzot. The korbanot in the Beit HaMikdash come in order to pacify and to make it worthy. V'kein siftei tzadik yed'un ratzon, a pasuk in Mishlei, yodim lefayes v'liratzot. Right? So again, Yaakov seems to have the upper hand in the conversation, whereas Esav says, I don't want to take your stuff that you're sending me, because that means, apparently, that means that there's an agreement. You give stuff when you make an agreement, right? What we call a brit. It was not that you just go to visit somebody, give him a bottle of wine, but he was willing to give Esav a lot in order that it should become known that they had made a pact. Esav didn't want to do that at first, but Yaakov reminded him, according to the way Rashi reads the Psukim, Yaakov reminded him that he, Yaakov, fought with the angel and he had won the battle, and that must mean something to Esav as well. And apparently, at least according to Rashi, it did. It did mean something to Esav. But Tirtzeini, Kachnat Birchati Asher Uveit Lach, Ki Chanani Elokim Ki Yesh Li Kol VaYitzar Bo VaYikach. Kachna, Kachna. I mean, not always means please or a little more. Kach is a tzivui. Take it. What's a little more? Well, I guess whatever you think. Et birchati asher huvat lach, the bracha that I bring to you, huvat lach, ki chanani Elokim, God bestowed upon me, chen, v'chi yesh li kol, and I have everything, v'yivtzar bo v'yikach, and he begged him to take it, and he took it. Yesh li kol reminds me of Avram Avinu. V'ashem beirach et Avraham, Bakol, as I state, Hashem Beirach, and here Yitzchak says, Yaakov says, Yesh Li Kol. So if both of them knew the story about Abraham, so it's like Yitzchak saying, I am like our grandfather. I'm like our grandfather. Whatever the bracha that I received instead of you, that's not what made me into who I am. But I am the receiver of the bracha of Avraham. Vayivtzar bo vayikach, and he said, I want you to take it. Vayomer nas'a v'neilecha v'neilcha le'negdecha. Okay, I mean, we have a few more psukim that I would like to actually learn, but it's enough. It's enough. Now, you see in this story how Yaakov emerges in a way that overwhelms Esav. And that the overwhelming of Esav is connected to the presence that he brought him. But sometimes when you give somebody something, you're saying, look at me, I can do this. I can give this present. And I think that it's important for you to recognize the fact that I am in that position. So that's what, according to Rashi at least, what Yaakov said to Esav. Yaakov said to Esav, you're really the weak one. I'm the strong one. And he proved it to him. by whatever it was that he wanted to give him, that he wanted to give him as a present. What I wanted to do is also, I mean, we don't have time, but we'll look at it a little bit. There's a book in Treyasa called Avadya. Hoshea Yoel Amos Avadya, right? Today nobody knows the name of the names of the Treyasar, because nobody learns them. It doesn't fit into any kind of schedule of Torah learning, or even, well, they have this initiative, the Mishra Chinuch, right? They go through all the chapters of the Tanakh, but I don't know. Who knows about these things? They work. Maybe they work. Maybe they work. Okay, so the book of Avadya is the last of the Treyasar and the smallest book of the Tanakh, one chapter, and his topic is Edom. His topic is Edom. Edom is the people that evolved from Esav. Right? How it could be that, you know, you could evolve a whole people. So I guess there were people someplace, and Esav conquered them. And therefore they became Esavites. Esav had another name, Edom, right? Because he was reddish when he was born. So it may be that Esav conquered a group and organized the group into a people, what we call a people, and that people was named Edom. So Rashi says, not Rashi, Avadya starts with this, Chazon Avadya. Chazon is a word that's applied to prophecy. You know, the Rambam tries to divide up the words that are used in a prophetic sense in the Bible. It's important for the Rambam because he felt that you could achieve that. In other words, if becoming a prophet meant a certain kind of personal achievement, you had to be a great scholar and an independent personality, etc. So the Rambam wanted to know what the stages were. I mean, how you get up to the top where God might decide to make you a prophet. So Chazon is one of those words. Ko amar Hashem Elokim le'edom. Le'edom. Now, who is Edom? It's the people that we associate with Esav. The people we associate with Esav. Shmoa shamanu me'et Hashem v'tzir bagoyim shalach. Tzir is a representative. Kumu v'rakumu aleh la milchama. Let's go and act against it in war. Pasuk bet, hinei katon netaticha bagoyim, bazui ata me'od. You're a very small nation. You're very unsatisfactory. Gimel, zedon libcha hesiyacha, shochni b'chadvei ha'sela, merom shifto amar b'libo, mi yorideinu, yorideini, Aretz. Okay, you think you're a big shot, but you're not. Pasuk Dalet. Im tagbia kanesher, ve'im bein kochavim simkinecha, misham oritcha nu'um Hashem. Even if you place yourself high up what's a ken in English?
Nest.
A nest, thank you. So even if you put yourself high up, you fly up, and you make a nest to yourself, Misham Oritcha Ne'um Hashem. So we see, just from looking at these few psukim that we looked at, we see that Edom is the people, right? Not Esav. The people retained for Am Yisrael the hatred that they had for Esav. And even though Esav, as we have seen, you know, as we saw, the end of the story of Esav was that he remains the enemy. He remains the enemy of Am Yisrael. The enemy of Am Yisrael becomes the people who are the enemy of Am Yisrael. And we know that Edom, Esav was the father of Amalek, was three generations before Amalek. And we know that Amalek is the only people where we are directed to kind of do away with them, to do away with the Amalekites. We have to remember, we have to understand that there are things that there are people who don't change. That's Amalek. People who don't change, they continue with the hatred and up to today. And so finally, it's not in this section yet, but the third iteration of Esav is the first is Esav, the second is Edom, and the third is the idea that Romy. In other words, it works backwards. It, because the Romans caused this terrible diaspora, right? In this terrible diaspora, there are ups and downs, but it just seems to be going on forever. The first diaspora was 586 BCE until 536 or 535 BCE, right? 50 years. This diaspora that we're in now, I mean, I'm not saying that we're in the diaspora here in Yerushalayim. I'm saying the diaspora goes on, right? It goes on because we open the radio and we hear about the news of the diaspora in Jersey City, right? Mm-hmm. That's what it is, right? The news in Israel, it's interesting. They find, wherever it is in the world, they find a Chabadnik who speaks Hebrew, who can answer the questions about what's going on, and what's happening? What did the police commissioner say? It's sort of every place in the world. So since we're in every place in the world, we could be despised by Edom, every place in the world, which, again, sometimes you find it. It's representing the good side of Esav, and sometimes representing the bad side of it. But in such a situation, obviously, where you can't really trust them, and that's one of the differences between, say, Orthodoxy and Reform, right? Reform thought that they could integrate themselves perfectly, perfect harmony with the Jews, with the Goyim. And the Orthodox never thought so. And in fact, Orthodox Jews always exacerbated their relationship by wearing funny clothes and speaking in a funny language and demanding food that nobody else had or could get. So these were all contrivances that were approved of in order to keep things separate, in spite of the fact that we might be in a good patch now. It might be good. So Esav, I think, comes out as this complex personality. He wants this, but he knows he can't get it, so he goes for something else. And then if you go through the parasha of the one parak of Avadya, you'll see again there's a lot of dislike on his part, Avadya's part, for the Jewish people. Okay. Have a good Shabbos.